finds everyone at ease this morning. Many of you probably know the Quaker teacher and writer Parker Palmer. I came across something that he shared that really struck me because it was so honest. He talks about a time when he was invited to apply to become the president of a small educational institution, and he found that to be an attractive idea, so before he submitted his name or before he wanted to carry through with this process, he decided to engage in our Quaker tradition of having a clearness committee, which is where you call together about six or so faithful friends to simply listen, ask questions to help clarify it so the person can have a strong sense of just what their calling is. So Parker Palmer met with his clearness committee, and he says about halfway through the process, someone asked, "What would you like most about being a college president?" He said that the simplicity of the question sort of loosed him from his head and moved him down into his heart. And he said, "Well, I would not like giving up my writing, my teaching. I would not like the politics that are involved in being president of a college. I would not like," and then gently the person who was speaking interrupted him and said, "May I remind you that I ask you what you would like?" He said, he resumed his sullen but honest litany. He said, "I would not like having to give up my summer vacations. I would not like," again, he was gently interrupted and directed back to the original question, "What would you like about being a college president?" He says, "By this time I felt compelled to give the only honest answer that came to me. Well," he said in the smallest voice he possessed, "I guess what I'd like most is getting my picture in the paper with the word president under it." He says he was sitting with some really seasoned friends who knew that though his answer was laughable, that his soul was at stake here. And they entered into a silence, he says, where I could only sweat and inwardly groan. And then finally, he says, this same questioner broke the silence with a question that cracked the whole room up. "Parker," he said, "can you think of an easier way to get your picture in the paper?" He called the school and withdrew his name. That, I think, is a little bit like what was going on with these disciples. They had one of those kind of moments of awareness, might we say. So often, you know, in the Gospels, and particularly here in the Gospel of Mark, it seems like the disciples never quite seem to get it. It's sort of like one after another adventure in missing the point. They're masters of missing the point. But they are beginning to see how different their behavior is from what Jesus is teaching them to do. They're going down the road, having an argument, and eventually Jesus says, "What are you arguing about?" And they had one of these Parker Palmer moments where they had to admit they were arguing about who's going to be the greatest among them. Jesus sees this as a perfectly teachable moment. So he sits down. That's what rabbis did when they were going to teach. He sat down and made a very simple statement. If anyone wants to be first, he must be the very last and the servant of all. In other words, as is so often the case with Jesus, he turns everything upside down and says, if you want to be big in my kingdom, get little. It's counterintuitive, isn't it? What? I think this fits perfectly with Jesus' mission not just among his disciples in that time, but for all of us, for all time, is Jesus is revealing God. He's not camouflaging God. He's not disguising what God's character is like. He's saying God is a servant. That God humbles himself. And he does things like washing the disciples' feet. And finally, laying down his life in love. And he says, that's what God's like. This isn't God in disguise or hiding God's character in some way. This is God's character. So if you want to be like God, do this. Get little. There's this whole teaching in the New Testament. This isn't just one isolated passage. It's all over our Bible. You want to be like God, you want to be like the Christ who reveals God, become a self-giving servant. Just like us, we need pictures to get things, don't we? Words just don't quite always get the message across. And so what does Jesus do? He looks around and immediately he sees a very good picture of what he's trying to teach here, a small child. He brings this child close by, puts his arms around this child, blesses this child and says, if you want to be great in my kingdom, you need to welcome these little ones. Now, he wasn't just talking about their adorable cuteness. We might be a little shocked to hear this, but in that time, children had no rights, no power. The father was legally in the Roman Empire allowed to abandon a baby that he did not want, to just leave it there on the trash heap. So this would have been much more striking in the ears of those first disciples probably than it is for us. He's saying, find the powerless one. Find the one who can't pay you back at all. Find the one who's not going to get your name in the paper as a headline. Help that person. Include that person. Become a servant to that one. To be first, take the last place and become the servant of all. Now, one other thing that probably should be emphasized here is that he's not talking about going out there and creating a checklist of the good deeds that we all do so we can get a big gold star by our name. All that does is lock us in our self-centeredness, really, doesn't it? That just makes us even more grandiose than we usually are, which is the main battle we're all fighting. No, he's talking about becoming the kind of person who does that. So that the change, as always, is something going on inside of us. So that we aren't trying so hard to be kind. Eventually, we want to become the kind of people that this is just what we do. We don't keep track of it. Most of us got some growing to do, don't we? I do. But that's what the disciples are. When they're on the road with Jesus in all those pictures, that's a picture of us. We're on the road. We're following the way of Jesus. And it's a way of sometimes gradually, occasionally quite suddenly, having something change inside of us so that we become different. I'm talking, of course, in our Christian life now about finding some soul training exercises, we might say, spiritual disciplines, things that we can do when we're not under on the spot that will help us react differently when we are on the spot. See what I'm saying? It's all about grace. Like I said last week, grace is God doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. Right? We need a lot of help from beyond ourselves here. But I also want to emphasize something else I said, which is that grace is not opposed to effort. What grace is the opposite of is earning. We don't do these things so that we somehow earn God's favor or deserve God's love. That's a given. But what we are doing is we're cooperating with God's grace, which is always offered to us. It's always there. God's intention for us is always that we become more and more to resemble His beloved child, that we resemble or become what we actually are now. We're God's children. He wants us more and more to pick up the family resemblance. So I think when people change, and people, we can change, it's hard sometimes. Sometimes it's a slow process. But when people change, I think there have to be a couple of things involved. One is we need a vision of a different way of living, a different life. And that's what Jesus was teaching when he talked nearly constantly about the kingdom of God. That's what it is. It's another vision. It's another way of seeing ourselves and our place in this big, wondrous, sometimes scary, difficult world with all these other children of God that we have to live with. It's a whole new way of seeing that and seeing our place in it that Jesus calls the kingdom of God. We could use other words like the beloved community, the wedding party of God, the time of celebrating who we are with one another and celebrating that in each other. It's a whole different way. And it's really good for us to spend some time every day looking at what that kingdom is he's talking about. He's talking about life God's way, the way that's best for us, the way that does finally lead to joy and a life that flourishes in this world. So it's the vision thing, but then also there must be some means, some way of that taking hold in us. And that's what these, what we always call spiritual disciplines are about. They're things that we can do that create some room in us for God's grace to take hold and to work. And one of the most beautiful examples of this that I've come across was from Richard Foster in his book on prayer. He writes about the one who's now called Saint Therese, Saint Therese of Lisieux. And she was known as the Little Flower. And she devised an approach, a system of discipline that she followed, and it was called, appropriately enough, the little way. In other words, what she did then was try to seek out the menial job to do, and to do it in a secret way so nobody knows you're doing it, to welcome unjust criticism, to befriend people who annoy us. That's a hard one, isn't it? For her part, Therese was convinced that these, she called them trifles, pleased Jesus more than great deeds of recognized holiness. And the beauty of the little way is how utterly available it is to everybody. Anybody can do this if they're willing. Everybody can undertake the ministry of small things. And those opportunities are right there in front of us all the time. Smiling and engaging with nagging coworkers. You ever have any of those? People that your job would be great if it wasn't for that person next to me. Smiling service. Listen to boring people. You're all listening. See, you're practicing this morning. Richard Foster says, we might think these little trivial activities are hardly worth mentioning, but he says that's precisely their value. You aren't ever going to get a medal for doing this. Most time you won't even get a thank you, but that's exactly what we really need. That's what Jesus was talking about when he said, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. You'll have your reward in heaven. It means heaven now. He's going to reward you and make you a more heaven-like person. Well, he summed up with saying that this really worked remarkably well for Saint Therese. She says that, or he says that one sort of difficult and uneducated and very conceited fellow nun had managed to irritate Therese in everything she did. But instead of avoiding this person, she took the little way, went straight into the conflict. And she said, "I set myself to treat her as if I loved her best of all." Well, she succeeded so well that when St. Therese died at a very young age, actually, and they were memorializing her, this same sister declared, "During her life, I made her very happy." Whoever wants to be first, Jesus says, must be last. The other question is, does my relationship enlarge other people? Am I available? Am I becoming more available, more approachable, more accessible to the people in my life? Find somebody that nobody else loves. Find somebody that's very hard to love.